This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, shake language's belly like a bowlful of jelly. This episode is the second of a two-parter about the Icelandic language, how it navigates the challenges of being an old language in the 21st century, and how it obtains new words. You don't have to have heard part one for this episode to make sense, but when you do want to listen, you will find it right next door to this one, wherever you get your podcasts. Speaking of which, podcasters get their own Spotify Wrapped that offers data about such things as when people listen to your podcast. And I learned you listen to The Allusionist at the turn of New Year. This is very pleasing to me. You're my kind of people. Either you'd listen to a podcast at a party in order to hide from the party, or you'll stay home altogether to listen to podcasts. Well done. Well done. On with the show. In 2018, I made an episode of The Allusionist about the Icelandic Naming Committee and the laws governing what Icelanders can be named.
The spirit of the laws is to preserve the old tradition of Icelandic name system. You first have your name, your personal name, in your case, Helen. And after that, the main rule is to use your father or mother's name, adding son, in your case, daughter, to your father or mother's name. When your father is called Páll, you would be Páll's dóttir, and your brother would be Páll's son. This is the main rule.
Since that episode, things have changed.
There has been legislation proposal, is that what you call it? What is it? A bill? Okay, so bill in parliament, and it's been presented, you know, several times of abolishing the, for example, the naming committee.
They're not going to like that.
No, and that's the reason why it hasn't gone through. So there are really strong forces that really want to keep the naming tradition alive in Iceland.
Nonetheless, in 2019, the naming laws did change.
So my name is Þorbjörg Þorvaldsdóttir and I am 31 years old. I am chair of Samtökin 78, which means the organisation 78, the national queer organisation of Iceland.
Samtökin 78's work includes education, counselling, legal advice and advocating for the rights and representation of LGBTQIA plus people in Iceland. And that includes campaigning for gender-inclusive language. In 2019, the law changed so that, as well as the previously available last name suffixes son and dóttir, there was now also a gender-free one, bur.
Samtökin 78, the national queer organisation, worked with Trans Iceland and Intersex Iceland in forming that legislation that added this suffix to the last names. This specific change to the naming laws that we have, because we do have restrictions on what you can name your children and how you can be named yourself. This happened through a different kind of legislation. So it wasn't really a legislation that was meant to change the name laws. It was just the fact that we added a third gender registration.
In 2019, the Icelandic government, the Althingi, unanimously voted to add a third option for legal gender, X, neither male nor female.
Then, of course, the naming laws had to be updated to suit that need. So that's why son and dóttir didn't work anymore, and there had to be added bur, or the option to just leave son or daughter or child out.
How did you land on bur?
It's an old word for son or descendant. But it used to be a masculine word, but it sounds like a neuter word to speakers.
You can only get it, though, if your official gender is registered as neither male or female, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So we still have these restrictions.
Is it difficult to change your name in Iceland? So if you were dóttir before and you wanted bur?
I don't think so, no. It used to be, since a law was passed in 2012 on the rights of trans people, you could get name change and gender marker change after going through the healthcare system. But now it's completely your own decision and you can go to the registry of Iceland and have that change if you want to. There's just a form that you have to fill in, maybe a process fee or something like that. But yeah, I'd assume it's quite easy. But to be able to change your name, you need to change your gender registration.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the thing that you need to do first.
Do you know if many people have applied to change their names to Bor in the last 2 years?
I actually don't know. I don't think that many people have. I don't think many people have used Bor.
Oh.
Even though it's such a it's such a nice addition to the naming conventions, right? But I think more non-binary people are opting to use the last name without the son or daughter, or the patronym or the matronym, or without the son or daughter. We often do this for short, so people would maybe refer to me as Thorbjörg Þorvalds instead of Thorbjörg Þorvaldsdóttir.
Right.
So it sounds, I guess, more natural than using the Bor.
As well as the new gender-free suffix for last names, the 2019 Gender Autonomy Act brought another big change for first names. To recap the situation as it was in 2018, a first name must be male or female and match the bearer's gender accordingly. Yes, this is a binary gendered system. The name must be on the personal names register, on which there are around 2,000 approved names for each gender. Well, not anymore.
With the new law, with the Gender Autonomy Act, when that passed, all names also became gender neutral, so all first names.
Was it difficult to get that changed?
No.
Mm.
It wasn't really a big discussion surrounding this bill. It basically went through, and people didn't realize until afterwards, because a man in the north of Iceland, his name is Sigurdur, used to be Sigurdur, is now Sigríður. He was named after his grandmother, but her name was Sigríður, and that is a woman's name. Has the same ending as the man's name, Sigurdur, but declines in a different way, so they are of two different grammatical genders. Yeah, so he was named Sigurdur after his grandmother, Sigríður, and he opted to change his name to Sigríður after he found out he could, after the law was passed. And that was like a huge news item. And people were... Not everybody was happy about it. And that was really, really revealing kind of to see, because people didn't like that sort of gender bending.
Hmm.
They were like, so how am I supposed to know, you know, the gender of the person I'm talking to, or you know, sending an email to, or whatever.
Why do they want to know?
Exactly. Yeah. Or, well, they need to know because they're gendering their whole language, you know. So it's So that's why we need to know. We need to know how to address people. So, but you know, we've solved this, right? At least in email, we can write our pronouns in the signature, right? And let people know exactly how to address us, if we are comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
So this discussion really didn't really happen before the law was passed, and this particular change wasn't discussed that much. Until after it had passed, and then people were like, hey, whoa, what just happened?
Too late then.
Yeah, but then you know, 2 years on, nothing changed, of course. So people still name their children more or less along the gender lines, and, you know.
Well, it's quicker to change language than society, isn't it?
Yeah. We still, of course, have the grammatical gender. So we have masculine and feminine. We do have neuter as well. And the names are declined as masculine or feminine names and so on. But now, according to the laws, I could name my daughter with a traditional boy's name without that being a problem. And before, that was not possible. So there have been quite a lot of positive changes in that regard.
Are there any movements to get rid of all gendering in adjectives, say, just to make that part a bit easier?
It would be impossible.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think no. It's not only adjectives. It's also pronouns or like other types of pronouns. So not just the personal pronouns, but referential pronouns and so on. So all of it is gendered. In Icelandic, everything is gendered. So even sometimes saying hello can be gendered. Yeah, so I guess our situation is much more difficult in a sense.
Like a lot of languages, Icelandic has three grammatical genders, masculine, feminine and neuter. If you've listened to this show for a while, specifically to No Title, you will know that I'm not a fan of grammatical gender. A, if you're neither male nor female, but those are the only options in the language to describe yourself, every adjective is a bird flip from the lexicon. B, grammatical gender takes up brain space that I need for essential functions, like not falling over. I don't see why it's useful, and why is it even here?
There used to be two genders, or that's what people think, the inanimate and then the animate. So usually that's how gender systems are set up, that there's the animate-inanimate distinction or the male-female, maybe inanimate distinction. But people think that the feminine and the masculine evolved out of the masculine. So the masculine would be the animate gender that changed into feminine and masculine, and then we kept the neuter as the inanimate. Whoa, did I make sense? I'm not sure if that made sense.
I mean, it doesn't make sense in a philosophical level, but you made sense explaining it.
All right. So this is just the way that language wants to organize itself somehow.
Well, it doesn't do it on its own.
No, of course it doesn't. But yeah, so we're dealing with old times here. it's something that's hard to change. But if we would remove gendering completely from Icelandic, we wouldn't be able to understand the texts from 10 years ago, you know. Mm. It would just completely uproot it. So it's impossible to do that.
Well, that's annoying.
Yeah, so we have to work around it. And fortunately, we're not in the same situation as, for example, you know, Spanish, where they have masculine and feminine. In Icelandic, at least, we do have the neuter that we can use, even though we're not used to using it for human beings or for individual human beings. We can still use it. So we can change it and we can use it to suit our purposes. And that's a really good thing.
Hitherto, in Icelandic, the neuter usually wouldn't be used to refer to human beings, but now increasingly it is.
We can use neuter for people. It doesn't come naturally to us, though. So people have to practice, because the neuter traditionally is only used to refer to... Well, some neuter words do represent people, like, for example, the word child. But in general, when we're talking about individuals, usually we use either masculine or feminine. So it's new to use neuter for people, for specific individuals. So this is change that is happening right now. And it's really fascinating to watch it happen. I don't know if it's going to happen in Icelandic or not. But for example, in Swedish and Norwegian and Danish, or at least, well, not everywhere in Norway, because they also have three genders somewhere. But okay, so let's say Danish and Swedish. There, they now have two genders, neuter, and then the masculine-feminine gender, where the two have merged into one.
Ooh.
So there's an animacy distinction now. Or, well, an animacy distinction for nouns that denote human beings, and then you have, you can also have the two genders on random objects, you know.
Is there enough vocabulary in Icelandic for different queer identities?
I'd say there is now. It's not complete, of course, because, of course, new identities and new words are being made, formed all the time or coined all the time. So, but we're trying to keep up. And 6 years ago, we had like a neologism contest where we tried to find words for all sorts of different identities, such as, you know, bi-gender or genderqueer and so on. And we found quite a few, or we at least some were chosen. Not all of them have gotten into the mainstream yet, and I guess they won't if it hasn't happened yet. So there are there are a few words that I'm not sure are going to be used for much longer.
Oh, like what?
Like, for example, flæðigerva for gender fluid. I think people are usually just using gender fluid. They prefer the English term. And of course, that's just what needs to happen. So if the suggestion isn't good enough, then, you know, that's where it stops. If the grassroots don't want a word that has been chosen, in a sense, then of course it's not going to be used. And that was like, there was never the intention either to like tell people, tell queer people what words to use. It was more like giving them the tools to talk about themselves in Icelandic. And if they want to use it, then they do. If it doesn't suit them, then of course it's their absolutely the community's choice.
Queer in English.
Yeah.
Has so many different applications. So in Icelandic, do you have multiple different words that you would translate to queer in English, or one that works in the same way?
We mainly use one. So mainly we use hinsegin, which used to be an adverb and is now used as an adjective as well. Hinsegin actually means the other way. So it's this way or the other way or something like that. So it means the other way. And it used to be sort of a slur. Something. It's a word that we reclaimed.
Speaking of slurs, there's an older Icelandic word meaning homosexual that is pretty negative.
Kynvillingur. It's almost like sexual deviant or something like that. So gender or sex wildling. Our
wildling's quite nice.
Yeah, but it's nothing. So vittlingur is something, you know, someone that's strays from the beaten path, right? This is a really, really negative term. We decided, or people, I guess the community, people that are older than me, decided not to reclaim that word. Not in the public discourse, at least. But sometimes we do like affectionately talk about ourselves as kinvillingar. That's like an in-community, like an in-group speak. Something that I wouldn't want to be referred to by somebody else.
Otherwise, here are alternate words.
Samkynhneigð, which means homosexual. It sounds a bit formal. So people usually, or at least I usually, want to use hommi for gay man and lesbian, for lesbian. Hommi and lesbian.
It sounds like there's a loan word in there, in the lesbian has crept into Icelandic then.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So lesbian. And also the, and hommi of course is also derived from homosexual. People had to fight for these words, to be able to use these words, for example, in the radio and so on. They wanted to advertise the nights that they had and the services that my organization had in the 80s. And the National Broadcasting Company wanted them to use the kynvillingur term in the name of language preservation, I believe.
It's more important than people, right?
Of course, yeah. So, yeah, but in the end, they were allowed to use these words.
Other linguistic progress has been made with the addition of a gender-free pronoun, haun.
So I'd say this pronoun, haun, has taken off. It's in use. Most people have at least knowledge of its existence. Not everybody knows exactly how to use it. But people are trying to learn, and we are promoting its use. So I think it's taking off, and journalists, for example, have started using it correctly, and have been doing that for quite some time now.
Well, then hopefully it will catch on with other people then if they're reading it.
Yeah, I think that of course helps, and of course it matters what we do, and it matters. You know, for example, what words I use in the media and so on. People that surround or are around non-binary people have no problem in using it. So it's being used. It's being used in the language community, but just maybe not exactly everywhere. The biggest issue is, of course, getting the words out there, letting people know that they exist. And then whether or not they get used is completely up to people themselves. We did have to fight to get haun, for example, into some of the dictionaries, the online dictionaries that are available for Icelandic. So there have been, you know, some emails going back and forth, and some activists sending emails and so on.
Could be worse.
Yeah, it hasn't been a huge fight, but still there's some resistance, I guess, because they wanted to see whether or not they caught on. But I guess because you were asking like how you get words to succeed, that's of course it is one of the things. They are there when people go looking for them. So if somebody uses haun and you want to know what it means, you need to of course be able to look it up and see it from an official source, and see it from somebody that's, or like an institution or something that is respected in Iceland. And then it, I guess it's more likely that you're like that, that a grandmother of a non-binary child is going to go ahead and use a word that Árnastofnun, the Árni Magnússon Institute, has kind of said is okay. Do you know what I mean?
Did it mean anything before it was this pronoun?
No. It's completely new.
That's exciting.
Yeah. There's an ongoing debate about gender neutrality in language use. And that has been going on for at least 20 years. But it's I think there's renewed power in it's in the maybe in the past 2 years or so. So after our Gender Autonomy Act was passed in 2019, because now suddenly, especially non-binary people are more in the limelight and are more visible and so on. So I think that has something to do with it. But this is also just a discussion that it's very multifaceted and it has to do with more than just queer people. It's also about women's visibility in the language because our gender system is made up in the way that there's a masculine default when you speak about human beings, as is in many languages. So people are trying to use the neuter plural, which is how you talk about mixed groups of people. But there are, yeah, so there are intricacies and many, many things to be discussed. Yeah, it's somewhat polarized, though. Of course, there's backlash to it, and people want to preserve Icelandic or don't like being told that their language or their language use is somehow wrong or hurting other people. I think it also has to do with people not wanting to be told that they are that they're homophobic or misogynistic or something for not knowing how to use this gender-neutral language because it doesn't. Like, if you've grown up with Icelandic, as it was traditionally spoken, it is quite the change to use the gender neutral language and people don't want to be accused of something that maybe doesn't, isn't true.
Yeah.
So people get afraid and then they, you know how it is. People start arguing and...
Yeah.
I think we've managed, or at least we're trying to frame it more as a challenge and more as also as a viability thing because... We know that young non-binary kids, for example, are speaking English to try to get rid of all of the gendering in Icelandic. We have a strong tradition for language preservation and so on. So that's something we can also use to get people to embrace this change.
Interesting. So it's either change the Icelandic or Icelandic will make itself obsolete.
Yeah.
Those are the options.
Yeah. No, this is what is happening. So we need to face it. But it's true that change can happen fast here. And it's really good if we can get changes through here that can be, you know, an inspiration for other countries or other places in the world. That would be really nice.
The Illusionist is an independent podcast made by me, Helen Zaltzman, with the support of you, insert your name here. Thank you for listening and recommending the show to your friends and writing reviews and being a patron at patreon.com/illusionist, where you can hang out with your fellow patrons and get behind-the-scenes glimpses into the show. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is... Deltiologist, noun, a person who collects postcards as a hobby. Try using Deltiologist in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. You heard from Thorbjörg Thorvaldsdottir, chair of Samtökin 78, the national queer organisation of Iceland. The music is by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com and the experimental podcast Neutrino Watch. Our ad partner is Multitude. To sponsor an episode of the show in 2022, contact them at multitude.productions/ads. Find Allusionist Show on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, especially if you want a big update on the gravestone I talked about in No Title, the one with supposedly the earliest known written instance of Miz. I found it, I went to it, and discovered something shocking! And to hear or read every episode of the show, get links to more information about topics therein, obtain merch such as the new Potato Fugue State sweatshirts, your own personal carb duvet, or the multi-denominational Winterval wear, or to see the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words and to browse a lexicon of every word ever covered in the show to listen to the episode about it, visit the show's forever home, theillusionist.org.